Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts.
Peter, my microphone is working, Leonard.
Rich Nicodem with no follow-up to that.
And I am Dr. Dave DeProspero, and joining us in the studio tonight is...
Steve.
Our investigator, Steve. How are you, Steve?
Good.
All right.
So you've got to actually put your lips right around the microphone when you talk.
Kiss the microphone. Come on.
I'm doing perfect.
There you
good.
Go.
All right. Yes, we're having some ongoing sound problems with our microphones and cables and mixer and all sorts of combinations thereof. We can hear Pete right now breathing.
And all I did was sit down.
It normally happens that Pete touches a piece of technology and it just goes horribly awry. Anyway, we're here. We're live from Central New York. And we will be right back.
Phone lines are now open. In North America, call toll free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
Big man.
Goodness. We are back. Back for the attack. This is Paranormal Investigator Radio, and I'm your co-host, Rich Nicodem, with Dr. Dave, Pete, and the notorious Steve Roscoe. So, we've got some news for you tonight. It's not very groundbreaking, but it is certainly cool, as it always is. How many people are on Facebook? Well, if I had to guess, probably I'd say about 100% of our listening audience has probably got a Facebook page.
I'm not.
Or stocks. Well, Dave's different anyways. We'd expect that, but... Anyways, you've all heard of the term photo bombing. You know, when people get behind you and they do their little peace signs or, you know, whatever it is, devil signs, whatever. But here's an interesting photo. A woman posted a photo. This is actually a New Hampshire woman posted a photo on Facebook, a snapshot of her. I'll share it with the group. I'm not really into sharing too much, but I will share this. But as you can take a look, there's something photo bombing the photo in the background. Do you see that?
Absolutely, it's a face, but what is it reflecting in?
Well,
I see what it is. All right, it's an enlargement of like a mirror in the background.
Correct.
Wow.
The claim is that they discovered that photo afterwards, and that is actually a ghost.
Looks like the girl from The Conjuring.
Wow. Anyways, folks, the claim is that it is a ghost. It is pretty creepy looking, but. Then again, it could be a doll. It could be anything.
It does look like a little young, like 1900s girl.
It does. The article is very short, but I'll read it to you here. It was a New Hampshire man made a startling discovery when he noticed a ghostly figure photobombing a friend's Facebook snapshot. Now, an expert photo analyst is saying that the phantom is real. 2 weeks ago, Daniel Tanner decided to pursue a friend's online photo album when something eerie caught his eye. In the background of an image that shows Tanner's friend posing with her canine companion, what appears to be a ghost of a young girl can be seen peering through the window. My friend has been claiming for months that her house is haunted, Tanner told Reddit. Her husband took this pic a few days ago. If this is a pixelation, it's a damn good one. But like any other ghost picture, you have to take it with a grain of salt. To me, it looks like any of hundreds of Japanese-created ghost hoax photos. You can just tell, unfortunately... Any of the timeless, wow, big word there. Because of technology, the ghost photograph, as far as being evidence goes, unless you were there, has pretty much been ruined. The upside, Halloween nears. So again, I mean, every time there is a photo of a ghost someplace and we look at it, there's always the skeptic side that's going to call it and said, well, it's a photo, it's a doll, it's something else, not a ghost. Now you guys saw it. What is your thought on this? What do you think? I was hoping it was going to be a pig man, but...
It does look... It looks like a perfect image of a little girl. So, I mean, if there was...
Or of a doll.
Of a doll, correct. So if there was a bit of skepticism in my mind, it's that it's not a pixelation, it's not matrixing, it's actually an image of a little girl. It looks exactly like it.
You know, about a month ago, Steve and I were called out on a consultation, and we were shown some pictures on a cell phone camera. It was the most amazing matrix thing I've ever seen. When the guy said, "Look at this, it's two leprechauns fighting," I couldn't even dispute it because it looked like two leprechauns fighting.
She had like fairies, and it actually looked like fairies.
Was it from a camera phone or? We're going to have to look into the manufacturer of the phone to see if there's other claims of fairy photos.
You know, normally it's just like a smiley face and an orb, and we just say, that's nice, but this one really looked like, which set it up.
Sure was a reflection of a bar mug in the background someplace, with two leprechauns putting their dukes up, like the Fighting Irish Notre Dame.
Yeah, it could have been.
But anyways, we get all sorts of claims. I've even taken some photos at... I've showed you guys where I thought it looked like a face in the glass, looking with eyes, its mouth wide open like it's screaming, and people looked at it, that's just matrixing. Automatically dismissed.
That's the easiest way to just end a conversation. Just shoot them down.
There you go. So, folks, if you have any photos that you'd like to share...
Please don't send them to us.
I mean, of ghosts, okay?
We got to keep it clean.
You can email them to us at our website. Dave, and our website is?
I have Twizzlers in my mouth. I'm sorry. It is paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Hold on. In fact, let us just play you a clip.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology you would like us to review, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
How was that for an answer, Rich?
Loved it. Good work.
Thank you.
So, guys, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Pete has a mouthful of Twizzlers as well, but he's coming here.
Well, as many have seen, we changed our group photo on the website. What an astonishing event it was to actually get everybody into the woods all together at one time.
Seriously, the schedules are ridiculous.
Mike, you finally have your own body on top of your head. Well, wait a minute, your head on top of your body. Right.
For those of you that haven't heard that story, Mike's our big guy. We actually had another big guy before Mike, and we just could not get a team photo scheduled with Mike, so we simply superimposed his head on top of our former member's body. And it fit perfectly. You didn't know that, Steve, did you? And it worked great, didn't it?
We could Photoshop anything.
That's probably what you don't want to tell the people in the listening audience.
That's true.
As we give them evidence that we've got from paranormal investigating cases, we can Photoshop anything.
We could put a Viking hat on you. Well, we've had a few interesting investigations over the past couple of weeks. I've been breaking in a few new ladies. Yes, the sausage convention ends.
I think you need to clarify that statement, Pete. Good God.
We've been investigating women.
What?
We have not been breaking in women.
What he's trying to say is we actually have more females on our team.
We have been evaluating new potential investigators for our team. How's that?
That's why he's the doctor.
Yes. And we've taken a few of them out on a couple of investigations, and they've all really shined. They've jumped into helping set up the DVR system and the cameras, which itself was a challenge in our last investigation. They seem to be very engaged in the Q&A sessions when we do EVPs and Spirit Box. And by the way, I do have a Spirit Box that I want to talk about a little bit later on the show with a Faraday cage here, or pouch, as it's now called, that we can discuss a little bit afterwards. But yeah, I'd have to say that the new potential members worked out pretty well for us so far.
I was quite impressed, especially with the debunking. They jumped right into rip things apart, especially that shadow movement that was in the basement. That was pretty intense while it was happening.
Well, we had some shadow movement during the investigation, and when we asked it to move, the shadow actually moved, which sort of blew our mind. But later on, there was another shadow moving, and it happened to be one of the investigators in front of a little light that was radiating off of a cooler that would actually make the shadow move. However, the shadow moved a different direction than the original shadow that we asked to move. So we believe what we first saw, that shadow moving, was actually a legitimate paranormal conceived type thing that happened. But the rest of the other ones that we saw were actually our investigator Jen's leg.
It was a lot of screaming, a lot of fear.
Yes. And we got a lot of really interesting language coming out of the spirit box, too. Pretty vulgar stuff.
They just do not like me on the other side. I don't
Pete
know.
Pete always gets swearing over the spirit box, always.
I think there's a paranormal group always out there in the other world that waits for Pete to call on.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have a little scanner.
That could
and they
be.
Wait for Pete Leonard to come on board, and then they follow him to where he is and get on there and start throwing vulgarities at him and yelling at him and harassing him.
I mean, I sort of felt bad for the ladies right off the bat when the thing identified itself as an incubus. I sort of figured we were in some trouble at that point. But once the swearing started, I knew it just wanted me.
Well, it called me a freak a couple times. And I'm really not sure what that was about, but...
Well, we've called you a freak a couple times, too, but I'm kidding.
But the... I will say again, I mean, we're a broken record here at R.I.P. that the EMF pump, again, seemed to create some weirdness in the basement where the shadow was, the weird Frank's box session. But the funny thing was, we were doing two Frank's boxes, one on the second floor and one in the basement. I guess you were upstairs getting a lot of swearing and
yeah,
other things
definitely.
While we were talking with the incubus.
Yeah, it was coming through with a lot of vulgarity, and we got a man's voice, and we got a woman's voice, and at the same time, it was getting pretty dense where you guys were with the shadows, the darkness, the stuff coming out of the Frank's box. Now, there's definitely a lot going on there. It got to the point where the homeowner heard a few words and just got a little concerned and left the room. So, but, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. And when we do Frank's box sessions, a lot of times we'll get feedback, but not that severe. What are your thoughts on it, Steve? You were there.
I just felt that it was really peculiar because with swearing, and it's nothing we haven't heard before, but when it comes across so strong, it tends to startle you a little bit, you know, really get your attention. And especially
right.
They're gonna freak out.
Right.
And that's when we have to come in and we have to tell them, well, you know, if you hear something and it's saying something, it's generally not what it's saying.
Well, one of the names that came through, and you guys both heard this, I'm pretty sure, one of the names came through was Satan.
Yeah, I mean,
hasn't heard shit before, it's not going to do it.
For us as paranormal investigators, if you were to hear that coming over the Frank's box or anything, you could pretty much automatically dismiss it as not actually valid. Go ahead, Pete, explain that.
At that point, it doesn't need to identify itself. If it makes you levitate off the ground or physically throws you through a stone wall, then at that point I would believe that you're actually speaking.
Right.
Right. I think it was just trying to throw words of fear at us to basically keep us from asking further questions. And that's the feeling that I got.
That's when I fire back with spectral wind. Give him a good one and that stops it all.
Oh, gosh. Pete is filled with spectral wind. It comes out at all hours of the day and night.
When all else fails, you call in Mike with a shotgun with rocks.
That's true.
Just like Supernatural, folks, if you pop the trunk on one of our investigators' cars, You'll find sawed-off shotguns, rock salt,
star crunches,
EMF counters, everything.
Oh, boy. We have quite the schedule coming up, guys, in the next couple weeks, don't we?
With what?
Well, we have Scaricon coming up. We have a host of lectures and public events.
What is Scaricon?
Scaricon.
It's a scary con.
Scaricon.com.
They con you out of your money and they're really scary about it.
Held at the Turning Stone Casino in Vernon, New York.
Verona,
thank you. Verona, New York. On September 13, 14, and 15.
Mm-hmm. Folks, you don't want to miss Scaricon. Tickets are pretty inexpensive. And we are also trying to find more volunteers to help out with the event. Obviously, it's going to be a really big event this year. We've got a lot of celebrities coming in, and we really could use some more volunteers to assist us with running the event. There's a lot more to it this year. We've got more panel discussions. We've got more film reviews. We're going to have it set up a little bit differently. We're going to try to space the celebrities out a little bit different to handle the increase in ticket sales. So if you're definitely interested and you want to be a volunteer for the event, you can go ahead and you can email me at rich@gpentertainment.com, which is my company's website, and just send your information to me, and I'll be reviewing all the applicants, if you will, for volunteers. You guys will be there, right?
We will.
Can we?
Indeed. I think we have a couple lectures that we're giving, don't we, Rich?
Yes, you have a lecture.
A lecture and a panel discussion, I
panel
believe.
Discussion, and we have a booth. So
our
we
booth
will
is
going to
be there.
Our 8x10 home for the weekend.
Exactly.
And you'll see a lot of different RIP members at the event, and as well as I got some emails today from former members that want to come to Scaricon to help out.
Oh, good.
So
actually, I see us on the page right here. Paranormal Cousins, growing up, investigating.
Really?
A.M. Saturday morning.
Are we on? Is there
Cypress Room?
Is there a picture?
Well, no.
Well, what the heck?
Do you know what it's like to get me to smile in a picture?
The Cypress Room, I believe, is one of those bigger rooms
oh, good.
Than it was last time. Because remember, we have all the big ballrooms this year that we didn't have access to because there was a different convention going on at the same time. So we've got full access to everything. So
beautiful.
it's gonna be a lot of fun. Dustin Parry is coming.
Oh.
Did you guys know that?
He's reuniting with the Taps
yeah.
crew.
He was kind of a last-minute add-on. He's excited about coming. I talked to him, and you know, he's said we're going to hang out. So I'm looking forward to seeing Dustin, as always.
Cool.
I really wish John Zaffis was coming, but he has got something else going on that weekend.
Oh, that's a shame.
Be great to see Uncle John.
We like Uncle Johnny.
But, you know, certainly understand it's a busy time of year for everybody. So.
Absolutely.
Wait a minute. I also see us listed again on Saturday at 2 p.m., Paranormal Groups and Investigators. Peter and David, along with the characters.
That was the same group as last year, wasn't it? Our panel discussion?
Yes, hopefully they learned the difference between spooks and spirits.
As I recall, John was about a half hour late to the presentation.
Oh, Brightman was there last year?
Yeah, he was there with us. Yep.
He's a big dude.
He's a tall guy.
We had a good time with him.
We did. That was a fun thing. It was all very positive.
For those of you who don't know John Brightman, if you do go to Scaricon, he's a really big, tall dude, but he's a really friendly guy.
Yes, he's got lots of tattoos. He's a really big guy, really intimidating looking. Really nice guy.
He's not Kane Hodder.
No.
He's John Brightman. Are we going to take a short break?
We are. We'll be right back.
Paranormal Investigator Radio on bbsradio.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And guys, I have a... Oh, did you want to say something, Pete?
Oh, no, I was going to say we booked a lecture for the Westernville Historical Society for November 14th.
Good.
And we're working on three others for the upcoming season.
Beautiful. So in coming episodes, I'm sure we'll be able to provide some more concrete details for those of you who would like to attend any of our presentations or public events. But in the meantime, I read a very interesting article, and I wanted to share it with you guys and all of our listeners. And
does read those Playboys that I sent.
No, it actually came from JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. This doesn't have anything to do with the paranormal, but it skirts and has implications on the field of the paranormal.
It's not about hamburgers again, is it?
No, it's actually about reanimation. Do you guys know what reanimation is?
It was a B-movie, wasn't it?
No, but Kathleen Kinmont's going to be a Scarecon, and she was in Bride of the Reanimator.
Oh, well, there you go. Steve, what pops to mind when you hear the word reanimation?
Zombies.
It's all okay. Real, man. All real.
All right, so what we're talking about is not necessarily zombies, but reanimation is the process of reviving a person who is already deceased.
Zombies.
So, now, while this does sound pretty odd, there was a study that was done at the University of Stony Brook. It's a SUNY school right here in New York, the State University of New York.
It's got to be true, then.
Stony Brook. And what the article was about is that our perception of death and the time of death is grossly inaccurate. And I know Pete and I have had this conversation many times in the past about what it would be like to actually be in the presence of a person who passes with all of the gear, all of the equipment. Holy train, you hear that?
We're right next to the tracks tonight.
Jeepers. So anyway, we had long talked about what it would be like to actually conduct a paranormal investigation at the time of passing to see if there is any greater opportunity to collect EVPs or to see if there's any EMF anomalies that occur with the transfer of energy back into the environment.
That should be easy. We just go down to the local hospital and just say, we're a paranormal investigator. Well, is anyone dying? We want to look our equipment up and see if we can get some EVPs.
You know what the weird thing is? The study was actually very close to that. Not necessarily with regard to the paranormal, but with regard to when death actually occurs. Most people have long believed that at the moment the heart stops beating, when the person goes unconscious, it's just a very quick passing onto the next side. But after a study of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, several hundred of those who were brought back or reanimated after being deceased, they found that death does not occur when the heart stops. The heart could stop beating, and the person can be revived for up to, get this, 5 days after death.
It's up to 5 days now?
5 days.
The last I heard was in Sweden, 6 hours.
Okay, now you bring up a good point, Pete. After 5 hours, the rate of brain deterioration, cell death in the brain because of lack of oxygen, renders a person brain dead. They could restart the heart. They could bring the person back to life, I guess, you know, if you define life as a beating heart. But because of the severe brain damage that occurred because of the lack of oxygen, that person will no longer be, you know. Okay, now wait, listen. Did you find the article? Oh, no, he's got Bride of the Reanimator. Okay. So what this doctor said is that Stony Brook in New York has a hospital that's pioneering the work of reanimation. They have all of the equipment necessary so that if a person dies because of some cardiac-related ailment, my goodness, these trains, they can actually bring that person back up to 5 days. And the process is not anything unusual, and it's actually something that's regularly practiced in Japan, but not regularly practiced in America. What they do is, at the time that the person's heart stops, they do several things. They wrap them in these special liquid circulating blankets, I guess, and it rapidly cools the body down from, you know, the regular 98 degrees down to about 60 or 70 degrees. The lack of, or the decrease in temperature, reduces the amount of oxygen that the brain needs to survive, so the brain is able to remain healthy with less oxygen. The second thing they do is they actually hook up a bypass for the heart, and they... You all right there, Pete? Okay. They circulate the blood from the person's carotid artery in the neck down to a vein near the groin, and the machine that they use reoxygenates the blood. So they're circulating reoxygenated blood. They are keeping the person on life support, artificial breathing and all that, and they are cooling the body. So the combination of these three things enables a person to be, if you will, chilled or put on ice in the suspended state for up to 5 days. Well, yeah, cryogenics, that's...
The 70s when they chop people's heads off.
Yeah, and they freeze them. Yeah, that this is a little bit different, but they do require the decrease in body temperature. Actually, what the doctor said, he used James Gandolfini as an example. He said that if James Gandolfini had died from a heart attack in New York, he could have been transported to Stony Brook up to 2 or 3 days after death, as long as he was given these life, or, you know, I was going to say life prolonging, but body prolonging treatments. They could have restarted his heart and brought him back, they said, which is very unique. It's kind of unsettling. What the doctor also said in his study is that for the people that had passed away from cardiac-related events and whose hearts were later restarted or their bodies later reanimated, those people actually had memories of what had happened in the time between their death and when they were reanimated. They remember conversations that took place in the hospital room. They remember seeing things, like if their eyes were open after death. They remember seeing faces, or they remember the people who came in or out. So because of this, part of the study was outfitting 50 or 60 emergency rooms around the New York area with a special shelf in the intensive care unit in some of these rooms. And on the shelf, they placed very prominent photos like Elvis and Martin Luther King and easily recognizable faces. And while these people were unconscious at the time of death, when they regained consciousness in another room, some of them were able to recall seeing these pictures that were on the shelf. They were accurately able to recall what photos were on the shelf. And this is after the death occurred. You know, the doctor called time of death, and they were reanimated after that. So he said that although the person is physically dead based on our primitive understanding of death, when the heart stops, people are considered dead, the brain can actually continue functioning for up to 6 hours without oxygen, and while oxygenated for up to 6 days with no heartbeat. So, kind of makes you think. Kind of makes you wonder. Well, you know, that's it, and I, you know, not to turn this into a morbid topic, but I remember when my dad passed away, you talk to the person that's deceased, and you know, before reading this article, my impression was once the heart stopped, it's just a very quick, you know, phasing out, but it makes you wonder if, you know, there is awareness of what was said, or if there's recognition of actually what's going on. They said a lot of this happens at the subconscious level. When the heart stops beating, the person goes unconscious. They're not just like laying there, unable to move. They're actually unconscious. So it gives a new little bit of thought to the whole topic of death.
Well, if you want me to share a little piece of info, when my dad had his second open heart surgery and things weren't so good afterwards with the infection and so on, he'd always said, he's like, I'm not the same person after the surgery. He's like, I don't dream anymore. He's like, I'm just not the same person. And I always wondered, and we mentioned it a little bit in our book, that when you go for like open heart surgery, they stop your heart. They physically take your heart out and they work on it. Well, they did in the old days. I'm sure they do it inside your body. But they're killing you. to repair it and then restart it.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again, we hear about as soon as the person dies, the silver cord is cut, and that's it. Their astral body leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So is that where you would merit the zombie? I mean, was my dad a zombie walking around until physical body death? I mean, I understand your argument. It's like, to what end do we keep reanimating people?
Right. The doctor did say that this is all based on like cardiac-related deaths. He said that there's many circumstances where reanimation cannot be possible.
Well, yes, a shotgun blast to the head. Oh,
right.
Probably.
Right. Where there's severe infection and deterioration, where there's a terminal illness like cancer. He said the heart is an amazing organ, and it can be restarted continuously. But he said under those very extreme situations where life cannot continue, he said they can reanimate the heart, but it will keep shutting down.
So that explains also, why did you bring it up, but I went to get recertified in CPR. They no longer do rescue breathing. They just do heart compression.
Right.
So the myth is the brain doesn't need oxygen. It just needs the blood flow.
Well, as long as the blood flow is oxygenated, I guess, you know, for some amount of time, the brain will continue. I guess if 5 or 6 hours is that magic number, you know, hopefully emergency services come in the meantime.
And they always throw up in your mouth when they come.
That's
too.
Friggin' disgusting.
What
the heck? Come on, Pete. On that note, we'll be right back.
Paranormal Investigator Radio, hosted by the Grown Investigators of the Paranormal. Visit us online at www.growninvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
Is that another quick plug for Scaracuse and Linda Blair throwing up green pea soup?
That's disgusting.
I don't know, Pete, but this book you got here, The Nazi Occult War, Hitler's Compact with the Forces of Evil.
The Spear of Destiny did him in.
Yeah, very interesting book.
Well, Vinny gave me another one. It's called Exo Vaticana.
All right.
Petrus Romanus, Project Lucifer, and the Vatican's Astonishing Plan for the Arrival of an Alien Savior.
This definitely sounds like an Eric conspiracy theory book.
About 50 pages into the 1200, and they do show the pictures of the UFO over St. Peter's Basilica when Pope.
What?
Pope.
Who?
Pope John Paul II.
He was installed? Like a washing machine?
Did a mechanic do it?
Yeah. I'm interested, but I can't wait to get the wood project.
Where's the picture?
It's page 1159.
Oh, that's weird. All right, it's a grainy black and white picture, and it kind of looks like a
cloud.
But
the cover with the UFO firing a beam down on St. Peter's Dome.
Yeah.
I think I saw that in the Avengers comic book once. Captain America came, though. So, chased the Skrulls back to their planet.
Maybe they'll let us investigate in Roman. Rome investigators of the
Paranormal. You know, I wonder if that's why our website gets hit so much, because they think we are in Rome.
Or the other Rome.
Yeah.
We did get a call for Georgia one time.
Yeah. Huh? Rome, Georgia.
Georgia. Yep.
I've actually been there before.
And it's in Floyd County, believe it.
There you go. That I did not know. So, anyways, while we're talking about weird and unusual things, I'm going to completely change the subject. So, we shared a little bit with you about some of our investigations and some of our investigators, and I feel this would be a great time to talk about this particular device that we have, since Steve, who's sitting across from me, has one of these. Pete, sitting across from me, has one of these. And now I've got one sitting in front of me.
I don't think
so,
I like where this conversation is going. Does David have one of those?
David does not like the Frank's box.
Dave is not a fan of this particular thing.
Not a fan.
What I have in front of me is called a AM-FM frequency sweep radio, manufactured by ITC Research Devices. It's a PSB7 model. And I got to tell you, first of all, just like with the EM pump, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be. You look at something. Maybe it's just me. When I buy stuff, I look online and I'm like, oh, And for some reason, I get a vision into my head of how big something should be, and then I get in the mail, I open it, I'm like, really? That's it?
Well, when you're spending a certain amount of money, you kind of hope that it's a substantial investment, both size and value.
You spend this money, and the mailman delivers it, and you go, oh, goody, I got my thing, and you open it up and go, it barely weighs anything.
Steve ordered a Pelican case online.
Oh, here we go.
And
This is a classic, by the way.
He said, dude, the price was amazing. It's like 20 by 30 by 10. I mean, the thing is gigantic. He got it in. It was like 20 centimeters by 30 centimeters. Yeah, he forgot to look at the...
Oh, is that the little one you put your batteries in?
Yeah, it's about 3 inches by 4 inches by... So it's not such a great deal anymore.
What,
it wasn't,
what
Steve.
What does everybody call it now? The Barbie case.
The Barbie case, yeah.
But ladies, he's a really charming guy, so don't hold it all against him. So anyways, back to this. It looks like kind of like an AM-FM transistor radio you would have bought when you're like, 8 years old and you're listening to. But the volume on it, I mean, it has a speaker, which really kind of looks like the speaker's on the front, but it's misleading because it's actually in the back. But when you turn this thing on, and it does a reverse scan back and forth, up and down the bands, AM and FM, and there's also a thing called a Faraday pouch. Now, Dave can shine a little light on what this actually does and what it's made of.
I've never seen a Faraday pouch. A Faraday cage is typically a copper mesh cage, and the copper eliminates the incoming signals from penetrating the mesh. So when you have something inside a Faraday cage, whether it's a radio or a cell phone, it prevents any incoming or outgoing connections from taking place. This looks like, can I see it, Rich? It looks like a little silver pouch.
It's exactly what it is. But you know what? When I turned it on and I placed it inside of there, it quieted it down.
I wonder what it's made out of. It's not copper.
You know, I'm not happy I didn't get one of them with mine.
That's cool, though.
But I actually turned it on and I placed it inside of it, and the noise from the channels and stuff went down. Hmm. Just like it does when we put it, the one that we have, in the big box that we have.
Well, I mean, copper is a typical material used for a Faraday cage. I guess aluminum or other metal to some extent can be used for it with probably lesser performance. Let's see. Okay, so he is placing it in the sleeve, and it is pure static now. There are no more radio transmissions being broadcast.
That's when I pull it back out.
Could that be the material from Roswell?
I doubt it.
The only that I don't like about that particular Frank's box is how very low it is. You actually need external speakers.
You mean the volume-wise?
Yeah.
Is that up all the way?
No.
Okay, so we're going to be listening to some static here for a second, folks. This is a very slow sweep rate, 2 stations a second.
Yeah, you can change the sweep rate, speed, backlight.
With this particular model, I had found that...
You had the same one?
That one works better, yeah. That's the same one I have. That one works much better than the AM does.
Well, I think the FM, if I read this correctly, they had expanded range on it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. It's got a much wider sweep rate than others.
Can I borrow it just for a second? Okay, folks, this is why I don't like it. Listen. That's all you get to listen to for 20 minutes during an investigation, hoping
okay,
that words
put
come
it in
through.
Here. Now you don't hear any more of that.
Okay, so inside the little Faraday pouch, there's a lot less
talking
going on from the radio station.
So yeah, it eliminates the radio noise, but you still get the background squelch.
But how do you get a spirit in that little bag?
The interesting thing about this particular device is why I like it is we've used it in quite a lot of success in different investigations where we're getting full names, and as a matter of fact, when we did the HulbertCon event, John Zaffis had a version of this when he did the full-on deliverance with the child. And I can tell you this, when we walked into the room, and I mean any male would walk into that room, they're doing the investigation at the Hubbard House, that thing would scream, it would screech, and then when we walk out, it would quiet right down. And John said that the little girl they're speaking with, something happened to her. She was abused or something by a gentleman, and she was very scared of men. And every time we walk in the room, he'd date, come walking in the room. Hey, guys, what's going on? I said, the thing went crazy. And John said, get out of the room. So he had to leave the room.
That got kicked out.
So, but as clear as day, I heard a couple things. I heard bye-bye in a little girl's voice come through. I said, I heard I see the light in a little girl's voice. Yeah, I mean, and Diane actually, we'll have to get that from her. She has an actual recording. And what's really interesting about this, if you do any of these kind of spirit communication sessions with what we call Frank's Box, which is the generalized term, have some kind of digital audio recorder and try to record the responses. In this particular model here, this PS7B, as Steve said, you can't really hear it. It doesn't have a very loud speaker. So if you're sitting around doing a communication session and you've got other investigators, you definitely need to get some external speakers. But when you hook the speaker in, you need to make sure that if you're using the pouch, that the connection for the speaker and everything is inside of the pouch, so you don't have any of that outside interference. So you don't have one of these?
No, I didn't.
Alex doesn't either?
Mine didn't come with one. His didn't either, I don't believe.
So, I mean, like I said, it's been an interesting tool. We've got names out of it.
When you get full sentences, and some of those full sentences contain bad words, you know that's not a radio station. No radio says bad words. Come on.
Now, years ago, and I'm talking about going back to 2004, 2005, Chris Fleming, who's another celebrity paranormal investigator, he's on Psychic Kids, Dead Famous on the Biography Channel was a show he had. He also appeared on Ghost Hunters. He had this, and he brought it to a convention I was at, and he turned it on, and he was talking with it, and we were getting answers back, questions. I thought it was absolutely amazing, and I think they actually use this particular one on Ghost Adventures, too, as well. So, again, it's a couple investigations we've used it on. We really didn't get anything out of it. You know, like when we did the last one, it was just kind of spitting and sputtering, and, you know, sometimes people, they listen to it, and they assume that they heard things, names or numbers. So, Pete, you got a pretty good ear for it. I mean, I actually have to listen almost right down to the device, but you can pick up things on it from a distance.
Well, that's usually because it's swearing at me and it catches my attention. But yeah, after a while, you have to tune out what you know is the radio voice, and the same type of voice, with the same tone, the same sounding, when it starts coming through time and time again, especially over a period of an hour or two, most likely not a reading station. And, the sentences, actually, those take you back. One of the best ones I heard was at the Otisaga when the guy said that he died of flu in 1887.
Like, came out as a full sentence. Amazing. I mean, I definitely think it should be part of any paranormal investigating group. I mean, it really is. I mean, you really have to be careful with it, that you're really getting answers out of it that are comprehensible, that you really know what's coming out, and you're not just planning things in your head. When we did one investigation before, we had this, and the homeowner asked me to ask a couple questions, three different questions about her husband who's deceased. How he died, and it came back and said pancreatic cancer. Said, what was his favorite hobby? It came back skiing, as clear as day. Okay, maybe I could have got the pancreatic cancer right. I might have heard that. I didn't know anything about skiing, but the third question, she said, if you can nail this one, then I really believe that thing has something. I mean, there, it's speaking with my husband and my ex-husband. And I'm like, what? Where was his favorite place to ski in the whole world? And he went all across the world skiing. I asked, it came back, Greek Peak. I said, Greek Peak. And her eyes teared up, and he actually had a cottage up at Greek Peak, and that's where he would ski all the time. So
then there is the other extreme where we did that other investigation and they were suffering some severe auditory hallucinations where they were asking the questions and they would ask a question and that's Frank! Oh my god, it's Frank's voice! Is so-and-so here? Oh my god, that's so-and-so!
Yeah.
And it just went on for hours and we're just looking at
I've noticed that, you know?
I didn't really hear anything.
whenever we get the homeowners involved in some investigation we've done, and we do that, they automatically start identifying noise as people's names and things. I just don't. I mean, if I can't clearly understand it and hear it, then I just dismiss it.
So David's over there reading diligently.
Yeah, this is. I'm reading an article here.
So can I hit you with the Voynich manuscript?
The what?
Have you ever seen the Voynich manuscript?
No.
It's that 240-page book of pictures and hieroglyphics that nobody seems to think of.
I've never even heard of it.
That'll be the next show.
Okay.
Because I don't know anything about it.
Oh.
Pete's going to finally decipher it.
I'm looking at the picture right
Ladies
now.
Ladies and gentlemen, it'll be a first in the world. Pete will decipher the whatever it is he said code.
The Voynich.
I did see it on television.
Voynich? Okay. Voynich?
Very, very weird manuscript. Nobody knows what it means.
We need Sheldon.
It could be alien.
It's a 15th century book. And it has not been translated. Huh.
I'm glad you said book, David.
Could be,
you don't know, we have a new book coming.
Yes, we do have
a new
book.
Oh, shameless plug, here we go.
There we go.
It's called Armchair Paranormal.
It's actually a series of books that we are publishing.
Like Shades of Grey.
Under the title Armchair Paranormal. And the one that we are finishing right now is Armchair Paranormal Presents the Hulbert House.
Oh.
Presented in a way you could never imagine.
All right, Pete. So explain what Armchair Paranormal is for.
It's for your reading pleasure.
Yeah, explain.
Just buy a copy.
What do you?
I said 50 Shades of Grey all over.
What is unique about this book?
It's filled with pages and pages of risque pictures.
It is not.
We've stalked and lurked around corners to take her most impressive pictures and fill them with stories. What happened?
Really, Armchair Paranormal is for those that don't dare to actually venture out into the field and investigate, but we investigate for you. So basically, it was written as one main investigation of the Hulbert House, although it's a compilation of about the 20 times we've been there and the incredible evidence that we've pulled out of her.
Pulled out of her?
Again, with some pictures. And my friend, the little doll, is in there sometimes.
It's kind of a cross between Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey.
No, what like Pete just mentioned, it's kind of a chronological story of what happened from room to room at the Hulbert House. Pretty much every room has produced some kind of unusual evidence, stories, and activities that we've witnessed. So we've gone room by room, and we've compiled all the different stories and evidence and dialogue and interactions that we've had, filled it with photos, and for those of you who are just a little bit too timid to actually do an investigation yourselves, but have always wanted to know what it's like to be on one, this is about the best thing that you could probably read to get a feeling of what it's like.
And this is the reason why you keep me and David out of places like Barnes & Noble's, because you go through all the book sections and say, this is what we should do.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, we have a
so, board game is in the works, folks.
So we have...
Actually, I never thought of
it. We currently have If the Walls Start to Bleed. That's our story.
The Logbook of Paranormal Activity.
We are finishing up the Logbook of UFO Activity. We've been finishing that up for about a year now, but it's truly almost done now.
Well, there's a lot of information when you leave the ghost hunting ground.
Yeah,
especially the cryptid one we're working on.
The weird forms that you have to include for the UFO, I mean, they have forms for everything.
And surprise, surprise, I wrote another one on historical method.
Did you really?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm sorry, on what?
Historical methodology. The art of research. Not art research.
With regard to the paranormal or just historic?
Yes, it's a culture for people, yes.
In the paranormal field?
Yes,
okay.
But it's geared towards paranormal.
Beautiful.
But the Armchair series, the inspiration, when you look through a lot of these books that are out there, it's just the regurgitation of the same urban legends and stories that people tell endlessly. You find it on your website. The Armchair Paranormalist will actually bring you right into that location, give you its history, and I'm going to tell you what happened.
And it's rather substantial. I mean, like some of the books that Pete's talking about, and I'm sure if any of you listening have gone to Barnes & Noble or any of the bookstores, and you've looked through any of the paranormal location books like Haunted New York or Haunted Pennsylvania or, you know, any of those books, they dedicate maybe like 4 or 5 pages to each location and then they just move on to the next. This book, or this series...
96 pages.
No, we're up to 115. 115 pages so far.
115 pages?
Dedicated to just the Hulbert House. And we also have ideas for a couple others in the series coming up that will chronicle some of our other investigations that we've been to multiple times. We'll just leave that alone for right now until we...
So look out, we're coming for you.
Keep an eye on ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com, our Rome Investigators of the Paranormal Facebook page.
I seen your updated cover. You put her on it.
I did. I put the doll. The doll is on the cover. There's one doll on the third floor that is just beyond creepy. I spent some quality time with that doll today. I was up there taking some pictures today. I was up there for a good 45 minutes.
By yourself upstairs in the third floor all alone with the doll?
All alone on the third floor with the doll taking pictures. At the crib room. Yep, I repositioned the doll. I put it against different backgrounds. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was playing around with the doll.
Dressed it in some swimwear?
That doll is creepy. That doll is creepy.
Pete's got the picture out on his cell phone of the cover with the doll.
That wasn't the room, but the one in the back is where the door slammed on me.
Yeah,
twice.
We have a very long section in the book dedicated to the door slam, because that door slams quite frequently.
Well, it slammed on Haunted Collector, if I remember correctly.
It did.
And the one time I was investigating it, I said I'm going to burn all these dolls in this room, and something got mad, and boom, that door slammed.
Visit us online, ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com.
It slammed right in his face. You can read about it on page... Just read it.
I don't know.
Who's took an eye out, man?
Scaricon.
Scaricon.
The next show we'll actually be talking about what we did. Lives will be changed. People will be saddened forever.
Mike, I'm telling you, Mike goes to Scaricon, and it changes his life every year.
He's already taken the whole week of vacation, even though it's only 3 days.
Did he really? That's great.
Well, 4 days to prime up for it. 3 days.
That's true.
I always enjoy it.
It is good. It is good.
So we might have some big presentations in the works, too, and some stuff next year.
And that's true.
Never too soon to start.
If anybody out there is interested in historical fundraisers for your location, presentations, investigations, you know, feel free to get in touch with us.
We're melting all over the lower part of the state, it seems to be, getting calls from.
Yeah, Pete said that we got a call from down by New York City. That's a good 4.5-hour trip for us.
I'm up for it, given the location.
You bet. Me too.
Have you ever heard of the Haunted Historic Church in Brooklyn? It's a Catholic church that's haunted.
No.
And if you actually go to their website, it's a regular parishioner's website, there's a little box in the lower left-hand corner that says, Are We Haunted?
Really?
It's all dedicated to their haunted history. Not something you would ever expect.
It's a Roman Catholic church? That's incredible. Never.
Again, it's sort of like St. Peter's. It's got catacombs underneath it.
Wow.
People alleged buried there.
Holy cow.
I've written that. Them Rome, maybe they'll confuse us with Rome.
Maybe. Jeez.
That's the train. We're getting on.
Boy, oh boy. Well, it's that time of the evening, ladies and gentlemen. We have reached the end of our show. We hope you've enjoyed another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We will be back in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Not this coming Tuesday, next Tuesday.
I don't know the date.
That's okay. 2 weeks from now. So if anybody wants to see us, visit us on our website, ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com. or our Facebook page.
Steve will be doing autographs at Scaricon too.
We hope to see you there.
For joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.